Welcome to Kodampa Podcasts. These podcasts offer practical solutions to daily challenges and help guide us to a happier and more peaceful state of mind. In each episode, you will find an extract from a teaching given by one of various Kodampa Buddhist teachers worldwide. All these teachings are inspired by the profound wisdom of Venerable Geshe Kalsang Gyatso Rinpoche, a Buddhist master for our time. We hope you enjoy listening.
Seeking, finding, holding, remaining. This is like steps in meditation. So seeking means that when you sit down to meditate, you first need to seek out what you're going to meditate upon. Seek the object of meditation. Because if you don't know what you're meditating on, how can you meditate? We're just going to be thinking of stuff, but our mind is not landing on anything. So we're going to take a visualization as an example. And Geshe Kalsang Gyatso often uses this as an object of training and concentration because it's very blessed, and that is the visual form of a Buddha. It's a very blessed image, and it makes our mind peaceful, hopefully. You know, here's one we prepared earlier. Right in the center of our shrine cabinet, we have a beautiful statue, and just observing that, I think, evokes a feeling of peace within us. So visualization is a mental image, isn't it? If I asked you to close your eyes and think of your mother or your father or a member of your family, you can have a visual image of that person. They're not appearing to any of your sense awarenesses. You can't see them with your eyes, right? Maybe unless they're here, or hear them. But in your mind's eye, you can see them. And if I said, imagine your friend talking to you, you can hear their voice, can't you? You can imagine the sound of their voice. So here we are using visualization and imagination. And how we do this is, first of all, spend a few minutes just looking at a picture of Buddha or a statue of Buddha, just a few minutes, and trying to observe the main features or characteristics of Buddha's form. So if I said to you, okay, I'm going to give you 2 minutes to look at the statue, and then you're going to visualize it, you're like, okay. And you'll be thinking, okay, what does his head look like? How is he sat? He's got the bowl. What is his right hand doing? So you're kind of looking at the image with a view to recreate that in your mind. Of course, we can't remember everything to begin with. That comes with a bit of familiarity, but you can get a general sense of the form. So then we close our eyes and spend just a minute or so trying to build what we call a rough mental perception or a rough mental image of the form of Buddha. And when we have created or generated that rough mental image, then we have found the object of meditation. We've reached the second of the four steps, finding the object of meditation. So some people think visualization, I can't visualize. But when we bring to mind like somebody you're familiar with, like a parent or a brother or a sister or a child, then probably you can visualize them quite clearly because through the power of familiarity. Yeah, you know, someone you know very well, when you bring them to mind, you can have a clearer visualization of them. And visualization itself is something we can improve. When we dream, I think we have perfect visualization. Dreams are mentally created, aren't they? And when we're in dreams, they're actually very clear. Maybe when we wake up in the morning and recall them, it can seem a bit fuzzy, But when we're actually in dreams, they're actually very clear. So we develop a rough mental image of the form of Buddha. Then we found the object of meditation. Now we go on to the third step. So we're the third way through already, three steps out of four, which is holding the object of meditation. So how do you think you hold it? What word comes to mind when you're holding the object of meditation? What part of your mind is responsible for holding on to the object of meditation? Do you have one? Concentration, yeah. That's concentrating. So when our concentration is functioning, it serves to keep the mind single-pointed on the visualization without distraction. So we're very concentrated. There's another part of our mind that functions to remember what we're focusing on. Anybody think about that? What that could be? What part of our mind remembers what we're focusing on? Nobody can't remember. Mindfulness. Has anyone heard that word occasionally? Mindfulness. So that's the part of your mind. It's the main muscle behind meditation. It is what enables us to remember our object of meditation. So just as I hold on to this glass with my hand, we can say with the hand of mindfulness, we can hold on, we can remember our objects of meditation without distraction. So now, does anyone get distracted here in meditation? Does anyone have the occasional distraction now and again? Just now and again they come up, right? So I mean, out of the 20 minutes of meditation we just did, what percentage was full on focus and concentration? I mean, 99%, wouldn't it be? Yeah, it's just that small little 1%. And even then, it's just a little bit of turbulence in the force, isn't it? Just a little distraction coming in now and again, but we're like, no. Don't ambush me. I'm a well-trained horse. I'm not going to fall for your distraction, your meaningless activity. We're like, straight in control. Our mind is obedient. Or maybe it's like, you're focusing on the breath and the visualization, and then lunch comes in. And then it's so funny, isn't it? Because then, well, it's not funny, but it is funny. But we focus on the avocado that just popped into our mind. Then we add some salad cream to it. And then you start like building up what you're going to have for lunch. And then you think, yeah, and then I'll have a strawberry tart for afterwards. Really nice with a cup of tea too. And then I'm going to phone up Bobby because I haven't spoken to him for a while. And we can talk about food for 3 hours. And we've got that football match we're going to go to. Oh, my team, Arsenal, are doing so well at the moment, atop of the Premiership. And why did they sell that player for? That was such a crazy waste of money. And then you hear my voice going, and if you're distracted, please bring your mind back to the object of meditation. You're like, but I'm enjoying this. Why would I want to let this go and return to the otherwise boring practice of the sensation of my breath? I mean, thinking about player transfers for the Premier League is so much more exciting than meditating on the breath. So we can see distraction as a method to alleviate the otherwise boredom of our meditation. It's actually quite an attractive thing to do. It is harmless for us. So I'm going to look at that a little bit. So the point is that we can be very mindful and concentrated when we want to be. So for example, if you're carrying something that is very hot and you don't want to spill it on yourself. Has anyone had that before? You're carrying something very hot and you don't want to spill it on your hands. Then you're very mindful at that time. You're very concentrated. Distraction makes us lose our concentration and our spiritual practice by causing our mind to wander to a contaminated object, such as a samsaric place, body, or enjoyment. The object of distraction can be an object of anger, an object of attachment, or an object of ignorance. And he says, distraction is the worst obstacle to our spiritual development. Okay? Distraction is the worst obstacle to our spiritual development. So think about this. We want to be relaxed in meditation, of course, but we need to see distractions are not just harmless forms of entertainment in meditation that relieve the boredom. Yeah, they're just harmless. Then they're not harmless. They're harmful. So why? Because when we're following distractions, our mind, our mind is doing what it wants to do rather than what we want to do. Okay? That makes sense? When you're following distraction, we're allowing our mind to do what it wants to do. What we want to do is just abide on the breath peacefully. What our mind wants to do is something different. So to use an analogy, and I think we could all relate, or maybe imagine this, that if you drove a car and fairly often, the steering wheel would, in quotes, develop a mind of its own, right? Just occasionally develop a mind of its own. Would you be happy with that, right? Would you be happy with that? Would you think, oh, that's just a harmless little limitation of my car, right? Just, I'll put up with it. You'd be, oh my gosh. It would be so scary, wouldn't it, if I said to you, you're going to go home and at some point the steering wheel is going to develop a mind of its own. And none of us could jump in a car. Imagine you've got a highway trip back with your kids in the back. No way. That's not harmless. Okay, that uncontrolled feature that my car occasionally manifests is not acceptable because it's a liability for me and it's a liability for other people. There's a danger associated with that. That's parallel to our mind because we want to stay in the driving seat of our mind all the time. But if we don't have control over our mind, then occasionally, and maybe more occasionally than we would like, our mind takes control of us. And it takes us to places we don't want to go. Like, does anyone here love getting depressed? Don't you just love that? And when depression arises in the mind, maybe it does occasionally, you know, when it pops up in this mind and you get this option saying, you're about to get depressed, press yes to continue or no to cancel. Does anyone get that? Little nice box that comes up. And you're like, oh, I'll cancel that. Because I'm in control. You know, you're about to lose the plot, get angry with someone, a little window pops up in your mind. You're about to punch this person's lights out. Press yes to continue and no to cancel. You're like, no, thank you, I'm good. We just get stressed. You can see how our mind takes us to places we don't want to go. It's not like we choose to go to those places. It's horrible. Like, I'm getting down here, I'm getting depressed, but it's like I can't stop this tendency. My mind is taking me down a path I don't want to go. It's this untrained horse that's taking me into this depression, taking me into this stress, but I find it so hard not to follow that, even though it harms me and harms other person. So if we're following distraction, we're training in an uncontrolled mind. You can think of it that way around. So when you're sitting down, you're doing breathing meditation, you're following distraction, you're thinking this is harmless. What you're doing is training in an uncontrolled mind. And you're increasing your mind's potential to go off the rails in daily life. You're increasing the mind's potential to develop a steering wheel that does its own thing, which is dangerous. It's harmful. It's dangerous for us and dangerous for other people. So when distractions come up, we need to think, this is not harmless. This is not just a harmless sideshow that my mind has created to entertain me whilst we just get through this breathing meditation so that I can listen to the class part and get home or get to lunch or whatever it is. This distraction is harmful, okay? It is the worst obstacle to my spiritual practice. I shouldn't indulge it. I shouldn't follow this distraction. So I just think if we see our distractions as harmful, then just like when you're punching in that passcode on the final attempt of your bank, when you meditate, you are also going to be very concentrated because you don't want to have a distracted mind. You want to experience the benefits of meditation. So when we create the mental image of Buddha, which we'll do in a minute, we use our mindfulness to remember the visualization. So we hold on using our mindfulness to the visualization of Buddha. And then there's a part of our mind, one more thing. It's called alertness. And alertness is the part of your mind when you're meditating that becomes aware that you have become distracted or that you're starting to fall asleep. Okay, they're the two ways in which we go, isn't it? Falling asleep or excited. Yeah. Nodding donkey or mentally excited. I think Buddhist meditation should have their own special insurance. It's whiplash insurance, this, from all of this. And they get, oh, my neck's aching. It's okay, you're insured. This injury. This is the two ways which we go. So when you meditate, we always stay alert. Alert in meditation. You're staying alert and you're looking out with a small corner of your mind of sleepiness or distraction. Because if you have become distracted, you need to become aware of that. So I'm just going to read an analogy that Geshe Kelsang Gyatso gives on how we use our alertness in meditation. So he says, the way to use alertness can be understood by the following analogy. If we are walking along a road carrying a lot of money, we might become aware, and we become aware of someone following us who may be a thief, we will proceed cautiously. Would you proceed cautiously? You got a big carrier bag full of money, but then there's someone behind you. Okay. So you're walking along the road. We proceed cautiously. Our main attention on the road ahead, but out of the corner of our eye, checking regularly to see what this person is doing. So have you ever done that? Like observe something from the corner of your eye rather than turning towards and fully facing. Maybe when you're talking to someone and you're desperately wanting to look at what time it is, but you don't want to look rude. What do you do? You're like, okay. The main part of your focus is on them. The small corner of your mind, you're thinking, 1:15. I need to go now. So we a small corner of your eye, checking regularly to see what this person is doing. In a similar way, when we are training in concentration, our main mind should be on our object, but part of our mind should be watching out for sinking and excitement. This surveillance needs to be conducted very smoothly so that it does not disrupt our concentration. Just as a person who is being followed by a suspected thief does not suddenly stop in his tracks and stare straight into the face of his follower, so while we are meditating, we should check inconspicuously, glancing with part of our mind, but never abandoning our concentration. Spies complete their task by just checking and reporting what they know. They do not actually take up arms. Once they have given their information to their commanding officer, the army is sent to eliminate the danger. In a similar way, alertness counters mental sinking and mental excitement by warning us that these faults are developing and urging us to apply the direct opponents. So just saying, keep a little watch while you're meditating, looking out for distraction. If you become aware of them, bring your mind back to the object of meditation. Eventually, we will be able to hold on to the object for 5 minutes. And that completes seeking, finding, holding, and remaining.
If you feel inspired by this podcast, then dive deeper into timeless wisdom of modern Kadampa Buddhism by following the link in the episode description. We look forward to reconnecting with you in the next episode of Kadampa Podcasts.